Guys, if you're watching this, make sure you subscribe. If you want to watch the whole thing, you can watch it on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify. Welcome back to another episode of Saving Grace. Today, we've got something a little bit different. I'm going to shove some trigger warnings out there as well. If you don't like the topic of phobias, emetophobia, whatever phobia, just maybe watch with caution, but I'm sure you'll be fine. Today's guests, we've only got Nick and Eva, or as some of you may know, the Speakmans.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. It's great to have you on.
Thank you so much. And it's funny you should say that, you know, because literally we can be on our own walking down the street and someone goes, oh, you're the Speakmans. And I'm like, no, I'm just on my own.
I'm the Speakman. Thank you. That's what I am.
But yes.
So good to be here.
Do you know what? I've needed you guys for a while. Yes. It's been a hot minute. You're in hot demand right now. So I'm glad I've snapped you up. For those who don't know who you are, give us a little summary.
So we're therapists, and I think we're probably most synonymous with the fact that we help people overcome phobias, and very quickly, on This Morning on ITV.
Love that.
We've been on the show for like 12 years now, haven't we?
It's 12 years this year.
A long time. Yes. And do you know what? That's the point. If you guys were rubbish, you'd have been straight off. So thank God for
thanks.
That.
Are you ready, for this factoid? 17th of March.
What?
It will be 12 years.
Oh, yeah. Just threw the date out there.
Yes. You've got to think about dates. Yeah, nice.
Well, I can't believe you've memorised that. I can't remember my birthday.
Just all things.
He remembers our wedding anniversary. I never do.
Really? Yeah. You got right in the calendar and hope for
so here, should we do a lot of tests? Yeah. Eva, when did we meet?
No idea. In the past.
Yeah.
Now, when did we first meet? When did you first look at this face?
I don't remember. I don't remember.
Oh, my God. Was it not a time-stopping moment? Everything stopped?
Well, actually, what happened was my car got stolen, if I'm honest.
Okay, yeah.
So my car got stolen. First job, company car, like really panicking, thinking, oh, my God. Ran into his office, see this dude with this like really dodgy perm.
You had a perm?
Kevin Keegan.
Dear God.
Before your time, he used to play for Liverpool. It was trendy.
Right, so
I'll believe you.
20th time, can I tell you when it was?
Tell me.
Was it?
Oh, God.
No,
right, it was the 30th of August, 1991, and it was 3:15.
There you go.
Jesus.
See,
he's put
remembered.
You to shame, you know.
I know.
Yes.
Oh, so, he's just really keen.
let's go with that. So, you guys met, stolen car.
Correct.
Had a great time.
Well, he was pretty nice, actually. He really helped me out. And like I said, I was like so young, and it was like my first proper job, company car. I thought, oh my God, what am I going to do? And Nick was really kind, and he rang the police, and then he drove me home. And then I had to sort of say thank you. So I invited him out for lunch to say thank you.
Love that.
I noticed he had a nice motor. I thought, aye, that's been clocked.
Yeah.
And then we went out for lunch, and we just hit it off from there, didn't we? And I found him really fascinating, because every bloke I'd ever come across until meeting Nick had always like been sort of a bit chauvinistic and just talking about themselves all the time, but negative. And this guy was like from a different planet.
This one right here.
He was like,
don't forget who you're talking about.
But he was so nice and so interested in me, and just really just and listened. I was like, aye. This one could be a keeper.
This is the one. But you both didn't do the same job when you met.
No. So when I met Nick, I was actually working in banking. And then I met Nick, and it was Nick who was already studying and sort of working in psychology, that he then told me about it. And I do remember thinking, whatever.
All right, yeah.
Whatever. but he kind of showed me, and because when we met, I'd had
all sorts.
Yeah. I can only imagine.
Eyes are still watering. when I met Nick, I'd had a really challenging childhood and life, and had quite a few issues of my own. And quite quickly, Nick was really sort of helping me through those things, and I was using that research, wasn't it?
You were my second project.
Love that.
What was your first?
Me?
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. You've got to start from within. Yeah. I hear you.
And funnily enough, when I was on my first project, because when I was 19, I was told that I needed to have my bowel removed.
Really?
And a colostomy bag. or I had 8 weeks to live.
What?
Yes. And I found an alternative answer. I was, this is a long story, but I'll try and make it as brief as possible.
Yeah, please when, do.
Yeah.
I've heard it like
so. You've heard it like so many times. You're bored of it, but Grace hasn't heard it before.
I will listen to it.
And we're that here, is a good story. And this is great. You know, saving, we're here to save her today, aren't we?
They are, seriously.
Right, so... So basically, I started going to the toilet and losing blood. And we don't talk about these things. It's like, I'm thinking, oh, it's going to go away. And it didn't. And, you know, I eventually went to the doctor and he said, oh, you've got piles. And I thought, oh, don't. But anyway.
Don't we all?
One day I collapsed, I ended up in hospital. And I was told that they thought that I had some sort of inflammatory bowel disease. I got taken out to theatre. Back then, barium enema. Barium x-ray, right? So it's like a hose pipe, basically. fills your bowel full of barium. And then they take x-rays.
Right.
I'll just give you a minute to get that image, and you're welcome.
It's in.
Is it
thank
in?
You.
You're
yeah.
welcome.
I'm out.
Right. yeah. And then I remember this nurse saying to me, are you so lucky? And I'm thinking, what? I'm feeling so ill. I've collapsed, you know, and my skin had turned grey.
Oh, my God.
And she said, because... your gastroenterologist is one of the top ones in the country. He lectures at three universities. He's a professor. You're in safe hands. And anyway, he told me that I'd had a condition called ulcerative colitis that had turned into toxic megacolon. And basically what happened, because my bowel was so ulcerated, my waste was being absorbed into my bloodstream and I was poisoning myself and becoming toxic, which is why my skin had gone grey. And he said, look, if we don't do anything, you've got about 8 weeks to live, he said, because what would happen is my bowel would rupture and basically kill me. He said, but we're going to remove your bowel and give you a colostomy bag. And he went through the whole thing and I was like, what else have you got? Because I don't fancy one of them. And you know, don't get me wrong. I've met a lot of people with colostomy bags. I know they're okay.
But it's not something.
But it wasn't for me at 19-year-old. And I was like, well, what else is there? And he said, there isn't anything else. Now, very fortunately, my dad was one of the most amazing people on the planet. And he taught me that anything's possible. There's always a way. And the answer, the key to life is in the library, right? Because he said, people have...
Let me just pause there. That was in the olden days, Grace.
Now it's
we Google.
I hear you.
Yeah, back in the day, you had to get up your ass and go in the library.
God forbid.
And then say, have you got this book?
I'd just die.
I've got little cards in your I've got that book, right? And find the books. Anyway, I made a decision. I signed myself out of hospital and I went looking for an answer. And I went into the library and I read loads of books on gastroenterology, on, you know, on the digestive system and bowels.
Pooping is one of his favourite topics.
I can imagine.
He has got a very good repertoire when it comes to crap.
I mean, one of the questions that, well, let's break the ice here. Have you ever shit yourself?
Do you know what? I haven't shit myself, but I've sharted before.
Okay.
But not too, I could count it on one hand.
Well, even a shart, you know, I'm going to say it depends upon...
Yeah,
it depends upon how much came out to whether it's a shart or a shit.
I'd say only a little bit, skiddy.
Definitely shart.
Okay,
fair enough.
It would be interesting to know whether
talk about this stuff.
Some volume only on denomination of what
shart defines a shart and a shit. I hear that.
I've got to be honest, I didn't expect the conversation to go this way.
I agree. I'll go into the library later on, research it, then I'll give you an answer.
But before I collapsed, I went through a period of maybe a month of going to the toilet and literally just bleeding. That's all there was, just blood.
My God.
And anyway.
Well, let's lighten the mood.
Yeah, lighten the mood. Anyway, you went to the library.
Yeah, I went to the library. And I, luckily for me at the time, I had a cut on my finger. And I kept picking this cut. You see, and the gastroenterologist said, there's nothing else because bowels don't heal.
Right.
And I was reading all these medical books and that said the same thing, bowels don't heal. And I'm like, you know, and I was sat there and people will relate to this where one minute you really focus on doing something. I'm like, I'm going to find an answer because I know there's always an answer. My dad's taught me that and he's shown me loads of things about my life. And giving me evidence, I'm going to find an answer. And then the next minute, I'm like, Nick, what are you doing? Get back in hospital, get the operation. You're going to kill yourself. Don't be an idiot. And you have this internal conflict, right? You want to do something, but then your brain's going, no, you can't do that. And this conflict, you know, and some days I would literally sat there crying, thinking, what am I doing? But I don't want the colostomy bag. Anyway, I was picking my finger picking this cut. And I had this thought, that's never going to heal. You see, and then that led me to the thought, is that why bowels don't heal? Because from the moment we're born, we never stop eating. So there's always something with my bowel. So all these ulcers that I had in my bowel.
Oh my God, because you don't give it time. Jesus, right. Sign me up.
Right, yeah, thank you. You're there.
I can't believe that just came right. to me, yeah.
So I thought, okay. So I fasted for a while.
Nice.
And I was still on, just so you get, I was still taking these steroid enemas.
Right.
So I used to have to lie on my side.
And, oh, right. God.
You welcome for that one as well. You've
had a nightmare down there, yeah, I bet. Yeah.
So, but anyway, I fasted for a while and I started to feel better. Obviously, you can't do that forevermore. No. You're going to die. So
correct.
I then started looking, right, okay, what is the most basic of food in the world, and it's rice. So I started having small portions of rice every day, and you know, 4 to 6 portions a day. And then I started to feel better.
Mm.
And then I'd introduce one food at a time. And over a year and a half, I created 3 lists. I discovered the foods that made me ill, the foods that just didn't really do anything, and foods that made me feel better. And I totally transformed my diet to the foods that made me feel better.
And then you didn't eat.
And within 18 months, perfectly fine.
Today's sponsor of the podcast is, of course, Skin and Me. Start the year off with some sexy skin. Do you know what I mean? Make sure you're glowing. Skin and Me, basically, you fill out a little form. You tell them what your skin's like, what you're hoping to achieve with your skin. They do with that what they will. And you basically get your own personalized skincare. This is moisturizers, cleansers, anything else that's going to give you your dream skin. And it has your name on it. So that's an added nice little bonus for you. These products are sustainable, vegan, and cruelty free. So you don't have to stress what harsh chemicals you're putting on your face. They are all natural. Get your first month for just £3.50 using the code SAVINGGRACE. Normally, Skin and Me will charge £24.99, but what a massive bargain. You get it for £3.50 on your first month. So you can reformulate your solution at any time as your skin evolves throughout the process. So you're always keeping it looking nice. That's mental.
It really is.
Right, but the big thing that came out
but
of
you
that,
gotta like rice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. The issue.
That's all we learned from yeah. rice. Yeah.
The big thing that I learned out of that is that information is flawed.
Mm. With the best intention.
With the best intention, yeah. Right? So what happens, we get information is passed down through universities, it gets lectured to students, students then become...
And you don't question it, do you?
Right, yeah. And no one does. And I went back to see the gastroenterologist and you know, I said, look, hi, yeah. Remember me? And he was really dismissive. And at the time, I was quite angry about it because like, well, you know, you would have done something to me that I didn't want. It would have changed my life, you know, in a detrimental way. And he was like, well, not everyone will be as disciplined as you are. And like, but there's an answer. You
wouldn't
don't
you
have
want
to
give them the chance to do that.
Right.
However,
but what I realised, so I'm going on. Off
oh
on
my
that.
God, yeah, you are. Yes, you are.
But what I realised is that, you know, if you look at specifics, he was a surgeon. And surgeon's remit is to open people up and cut away the bad.
Yeah.
Not looking for an alternative.
They want the job.
Yeah.
Well,
if we all ate rice to solve our problems, they'd be out the job.
It wasn't just the rice. There's a lot of things that I discovered that are really bad. But anyway, yeah. But anyway, so that led me on a path then at the age of 20 to find out, well, why is it information's flawed? Why don't we challenge things? What if we did challenge things? Could that change the world? And I started studying psychology and, you know, here we are 40 years later, would you believe? But we've created from that when I met Eva 30 years ago and I said, look, I found this great discovery and, you know, essentially we can change anything because everything that we do, every single thing we do starts with a thought.
Mm.
And therefore, wrong thoughts create wrong behaviors. And, you know, so like, you know, we're saying there's 3 of us here and you believe that vomit's a bad thing.
I do, yeah.
Right. Whereas we both think it's amazing. Right.
One
I love vomit.
I'll be like you.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but it's the same thing, but different perceptives of the same thing.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So you were saying that you had a phobia of heights, did you say before?
Yeah, and spiders. Like when we first met, I had a phobia of heights, and spiders.
Have you ever had a...
Cockroaches.
That was your phobia?
Yeah.
And you just were like, love them. Yeah. After that?
Oh, yeah, fine now.
Fine?
Yeah.
If I put a tarantula on your head...
Yeah, it wouldn't bother me. I'd be really...
You'd give it a kiss?
Oh, my God, I'd love it. Okay, I mean, we have got a pet tarantula.
Does help as well.
Yeah.
You do that on Saturdays.
But the definition of a phobia, is an irrational fear.
Yeah.
So if it's irrational, that means that something... Because nobody's born with a phobia, right? Period. That's it. You're not born with a phobia.
Well, that's the thing. I always thought maybe we were.
No. We're only born with two fears or awarenesses, and it's kind of globally accepted that the two fears we're born with is, do you know what they are?
Death.
No. Believe it or not.
That's another one of mine.
Fear of falling is one.
Right.
And a fear of loud noises.
Oh, okay.
Beyond that, it's not a phobia though.
Yeah,
it's just
don't like it.
It's just that you will jump. So mm-hmm. the reason that they sort of came to that conclusion was that if a baby were to hear a loud noise, it will jump.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
But show a baby a spider, show a baby some vomit, it's not going to react.
That's true. But we stick its finger in it.
Stick its finger in it, exactly.
Nice.
So, you know, that's and equally, when a toddler starts to learn to walk and they fall, they put their hands out.
Yeah.
So what they
automatically
established from that is that potentially we're not born with any phobias, but we are born with two things that we will protect ourselves from, mm-hmm. being loud noises and falling. Beyond that, everything else is learned.
So that's a great starting point, because knowing that no one is born with a phobia leads us to know that everybody can be cured.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Has there been anyone you've worked with that hasn't been cured?
The only variable with phobias is the length of time that you've got.
Well, with anything, right, yeah. It's the length of time.
Most phobias, we can usually cure them within one session.
Mm-hmm.
But some do need longer.
I suppose it depends how far down or how bad that the person is.
And the most
variables.
The most difficult phobia on the planet is emetophobia. Now, that doesn't mean it can't be cured.
Yeah.
However, that variable can take longer because, whereas, there's two types of phobia.
Mm-hmm.
There's a simple phobia and a complex phobia. And a simple phobia is, for example, I'm just frightened of spiders. That's it. That's a simple thing. It's just a one-off thing. Whereas emetophobia is a complex phobia because it goes from, I'm fearful of vomit, but then it leads into, I'm fearful of going into restaurants because if they've undercooked the food, there's more chance I'm going to vomit.
I'm fearful of going to doctor surgeries because other people might be ill in there, then I might catch their sickness bug.
I'm fearful of my kids coming home from school with a
bug. You can just put it into any scenario, because there's germs, when you think about it, it's just germs everywhere.
Yeah, but germs are great.
True.
See,
immune systems.
Exactly.
Loving it.
Exactly. And what when you're born and you're little and it happened to you and it happened to us and to our kids.
What happened to you guys?
You know, what do your parents do?
What did they take?
I don't know. Well, it must have taken me somewhere pretty bad.
Well, no, we all got germs. The reason that you're as healthy as you are is because you've had inoculations, basically.
Oh, yeah, I've had all my jabs.
So you have been given a dose of what you describe as germs for the purpose of making you healthier and stronger.
It's true. They do have some... They have some pros.
Mostly do.
What would you say? So obviously, emetophobia is one of the biggest. What are the top three phobias? Would you say?
Okay, so if you were to look kind of globally, it is kind of agreed that the top phobias would be glossophobia, which is a fear of
public speaking.
Oh, yeah, valid.
And that's usually comes down to a fear of judgment, actually, when you break it down, because you don't want to speak out because you think people are going to laugh
at you. Yeah, if you don't care, okay, yeah, fine.
Exactly. Makes sense. That's usually one. Fear of spiders is probably the second. And again, the reason that is a case is because it's a passed on one. So, like, why do you have the accent that you do? Because you copy your parents. So if you see your parent freaking out about something, they're your grown up. So you go, oh, all right, then it must be dangerous. So you will fear it too. I would say that the third one, probably snakes or heights maybe.
Or claustrophobia even.
Or even claustrophobia. So that one's a bit woolier. Personally, though, in our clinic, definitely number one, emetophobia.
Mm.
All day long, the most common.
Do you think it starts with, right, let me tell you. So I didn't know what it was until I was about 15, and my mum forced me to go to this hypnotherapist, didn't work, a hypnotherapist, and she was, because we were getting on a plane, because I'm, for some reason, my parents never just go to Spain. We always have to go somewhere that takes 9 hours, right? Of course, bastards. So I was like, do you know what, I'm not doing it again.
Where was it?
What, the flight? We were going to Trinidad.
Nice.
So thank you. It's all right when you get there. The way there wasn't that good. And I got there and I was like, I'm just really scared. And he went, yeah, you've got emetophobia. And I was like, what? And then he told me about it. And literally it was like something clicked and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It makes so much sense because I've had so many moments where I'm anxious. I'm like, why the hell am I anxious? And it makes so much sense. Yep.
So did that make you feel better or worse knowing?
Well, it made me feel better because I was like, right, okay, I know what I'm scared of. But then it made me feel worse because I was focusing on it. Because then after that, I constantly felt sick. I was like, I feel sick. I'm going to be sick. My phobia is sick, blah, blah, blah. And it just, so pros and cons, at least I was able to be like.
And I think the other downside to it, and I don't know whether you'd agree with this, is that once you know what you've got, you then start to Google it. And then if you find forums, honestly, anybody who's got, well, any phobia, but specifically emetophobia advices, do not look on forums, because what happens is you'll see that somebody goes, well, I won't go in here in such and such a place because that could mean that you could get germs from here. And then you go, oh, I haven't thought of that one. Yeah, right, I'll add that to my list. And that's why, by the way, phobias feel like they get worse, because they'll start off with just, so you're, however old you were, however little you were, there will have been an event that started your phobia, okay? Yeah. So, and it just starts off with vomit. But then, and that is just physically seeing it, but then as the time goes on, you get more triggers. So aeroplanes is a common one, because what if people are sick on an aeroplane?
And it's like, you feel sick as well on the plane. Because when I was younger, I used to get really bad. I always used to throw up on planes when I was really young. I don't know if that had anything to do with it. When I was really, really young, I'd always be sick on planes. So now when I go on, I'm always like, don't start. And I, you know, no one feels good when you're in the sky turning. Do you know what I mean? No one's like, love this feeling.
I do. But,
of course you do. Yeah, but no phobia.
Although you know what? That no one is now blown, isn't it?
Yeah, it's because true. But when you're on the plane, I'm sat there like, oh my God, I'm going to be sick. Like, even if it's an hour plane journey, I'm like, I'm going to be sick. I'm going to be sick. And then you're worried if someone else is.
Correct.
So you can't get off.
Yeah.
It's like public transport. It's not like you can be like, can I just, you might pull over. Is that all right? Like, if you're on a train, you got to wait till the next stop.
Yeah.
It's just stressful.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
But that's why phobias get worse, because you add more layers to it.
Yeah.
And what you've also got to appreciate, why phobias feel, why they feel they're getting worse, is that they are like, imagine a muscle. The more times you exercise a muscle, the bigger and more pronounced it gets. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with the phobia. So every time you're triggered, every time you think about it, you are exercising that phobic muscle, as it were. And that's why it is getting bigger and more profound with time. And this is where, like I said about forums, it's just dangerous, because as much as it's brilliant to know that you're not on your own, and I get from that perspective, it's lovely. However, when you're then comparing and, well, you know what, but you need to protect yourself from this, and I tried this, and you are just actually
opening a jar of worms. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all know how important it is to speak to someone, and if you're not comfortable speaking to your friends and family, BetterHelp can come into play. All you need to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and you will get matched to a therapist that suits you the most. And you can also switch therapists at any point if you don't find you're gelling with them or whatever. It's completely online. So if you've got a busy schedule, like you're at uni, you're working full time, you can slot this in to however you want, making it flexible and easy for you to do. Working with a therapist can get you closer to the best version of you. And it also just gives you a bit more stability to be able to handle whatever life throws at you, or it's just nice to have someone to talk to about things that you may not feel comfortable speaking to others about. So whatever it is, BetterHelp is here to help you. If you want to live a more empowered life, therapy can get you there. And if you're interested, visit betterhelp.com/savinggrace to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, help.com/savinggrace.
I'm actually coming back. So if you've got emetophobia, there's two things for you to consider. The first thing is you are not alone. The second thing is having the belief that you can absolutely overcome it. So I want to ask you the question. Do you believe, Grace, that you can 100% get over emetophobia?
I think I could.
Good. Then you're more likely to.
I bloody hope I could.
Okay.
I mean?
But you know what? When you're saying that, I can see there's an element of...
I think when you've lived with it for so long, you do think, can you? Because I don't think there's been a moment where I've got on a train in the past, like, years that I haven't been like, oh, I'm going to be sick.
So let me ask you then, what is the worst bit of having emetophobia for you? The thing that you want to do most, but you can't, what is it?
I just want to be able to travel. That's it. Travel, get on public transport, just travel without feeling like I'm going to be sick.
Are you traveling on public transport today?
No, my dad's driving me.
When's the next time?
But I'll still feel sick in his car anyway.
Do you?
Yeah, felt sick on the way up here. Always feel sick, actually.
But right, that's interesting because you said that you believe this started when you were being sick on a plane. So have you always had travel sickness?
No, well, not in... Oh, I don't know, because to be fair, no. Like, when I was younger, yeah, but I'm talking like 6, 7, whatever. But I only remember when I was in year 3, I don't know how old that would make
about
you.
About 7?
Yeah. I remember this boy in my class was sick over the table. Dirty bastard. Ruined my life. And after that, I remember every day at school, I'd be like, I need to go home. I feel sick. And yeah.
And just...
What was he called?
Morgan, prick. God, he Morgan. Wasn't. It was just because you were sick. Yeah, he was actually quite nice.
Called him out then.
Yeah, sorry, Morgan. Yeah.
Morgan, you're a really nice guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Do you think you were okay before that?
Maybe. I don't know. I think so, but I always remember still not being able to go for meals because I was scared. But then I think that time was very all mixed into one. Like when you're young.
Let me just explain.
Just hold on 1 second.
Go.
I heard that you used to like these things.
Yeah, I did.
Right, but now you've got an issue with them. Why is that?
There was one time I had a stomach bug and I drank one. You know, when you've just been like, right, I can do this. And I threw it back up 5 minutes later.
How long ago was that?
That was when I was... 14.
So about 9, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So you've not been able to drink Capri Sun for 9 or 10 years?
Not the orange one.
Okay. So what's the chances of you having a drink of this?
Yeah.
And not being sick?
You're telling me. What if it's like muscle memory?
I'm asking you the question.
I don't know. A bit scared that it's muscle memory. Do you know what I mean? My stomach's
okay, well, let's say it is, yeah. Yeah.
That's what's going to happen.
Right. So out of 10, 10 being the worst, 0 being Nick, give it here. I love it. I'm going to drink it.
Yeah.
Where would you be? 10 being the worst.
I'd be like, I mean, I liked the taste of it, but maybe like a 5.
Okay.
With that.
You're really not sure, are you?
No. Questions, I'm like,
I love the fact that you're so confident, and yet right now you
when it comes to a Capri Sun, like,
weird questions. You know, like, you know, guilty feet. Did they ever get the rhythm back?
Don't
think
know.
About that one, I don't know.
I'll have a think. I don't know.
Okay.
But then it's like that, but then when I've been drunk at uni, say I've had drinks, and I've been unwell, that I'll be able to drink that drink again.
And let me just ask you a question. When you say unwell, are we talking throwing up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because my flatmates always say, like, in fourth year, they were like, considering you're so scared of sick, you're the one that's sick the most.
I was going to say, you're a bit of a two-faced emetophobe, really.
I am. Yeah, I always say I feel like
I didn't want to call it. Yeah. I didn't want to call it.
I feel like a fraud because when I'm drunk, I stress out about it, but then I'll just pass out after.
You see, again, that's a major component. Most people with emetophobia will not drink alcohol.
Yeah, a lot of people, which is so well done to you for that. So not that I'm condoning you getting smashed and that you should drink. That you're living your life is basically what I'm about.
But it also shows how you can be in control. You see, you have got emetophobia.
Yeah.
However, you will not let it ruin every part of your life.
Which is good.
Some people do allow it, and some people become agoraphobic and don't leave their home because of it. However, you're saying, right, I know I've got it, but no way on earth is anything stopping me having a drink.
Yeah.
So you're making your own rules, which is what people...
Is travelling.
Yes.
The interesting... What I'd like to know is when you said that when I was really young and, you know... First time on a plane.
Can I just rewind a second? Because I think it's really important that...
Are you rewinding before
I'm just
back to the womb?
No, I'm not going that far.
It's tough time.
However, congratulations because you won the race. So
thank
well
you.
Done.
Yeah. 250 million
sperms. I tried,
and you did it. Really well. However, just so... I think it's really important, right? So we've established that... neither you nor anyone else on the planet is born with a phobia. Mm-hmm. And what I think it's really important for people to understand, and you were saying about hypnotherapy not working, the most effective way to deal with whatever your phobia is to try and work back to the earliest memory.
Yeah.
And so I know that you were talking about things that you can't do now and that I can't go on trains and things. However, I think it's really important to understand that that you have had in your life some form of misunderstanding when it comes to vomit. And the reason that I say that is because if your fear was real in the world, then we would all fear it. So the question is it real in the world or is it real just to you and the minority? If it's just you and the minority, then that says that you've had some sort of a bad experience and you've gone, don't like that, don't want to feel like that again. And so now you're like, avoid it at all costs. Mm. And I just wanted to establish that because I just think it's really important to appreciate how important it is to try and keep working back to finding the origin or even times before you had the fear. So going back to what
that's
you
what
were
I was
saying,
trying to do.
Yeah, but I do it quicker
I was
than
trying
you.
To do that.
You go on.
Yeah. Right. But one thing, whilst we were talking about how common emetophobia is, I think it's a good time to share some stats about a book. Right, because we've got some stats in there, the current stats in relation to emetophobia.
Yes, yeah, so this is my point. It's interesting. So, so this is according to the National Emetophobia Society that 9% of the UK population, or approximately 5.5 million people, suffer with emetophobia. 90 to 95% of which are women.
Really?
Apparently so, and that is true. Actually,
that's so weird, though.
That most of the
men
people
don't care.
That we work with to help them overcome emetophobia, they are actually women.
So kind of makes sense. I only know women that are kind of afraid of that.
We've had them. I know that our daughter, we trained her in our therapy, and I know that she recently worked with a client who was a male who she helped overcome emetophobia. So they do exist, but they are few and far between.
And just like Morgan, right, they cause the problem because it's usually a boy in class that's
and
vomiting.
That is why we've been together for over 30 years.
Yeah,
that's
the big picture.
The big picture,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you. That's mental.
So isn't it? So Morgan. Where is he?
Nice.
Do you know what he's doing these days?
I don't know what he's doing. Yeah. I know I had issues before Morgan, but I think he was the cherry on the top.
Okay, right. So working back, you know, when we work with anyone, we ask them to complete a timeline.
Right.
Because knowing that you're not born with this and knowing that it escalates over time, what we want to find is, how did it start?
Yeah.
Right, that's the issue. So when did it start? So you said before that up to the age of six, you said your first...
Oh, you got a little...
Timeline. There it is.
Yeah, that's a timeline, basically.
Right. So you said that your first plane flight was to Trinidad.
Well, so basically I lived abroad, so basically near Trinidad. So we were always doing these long haul flights. And I remember sometimes I'd throw up on myself on the plane or on the car back, I'd be sick in the car.
Why?
Don't know, got some issues, I reckon, with stuff. I don't know because I'm not like that now.
But could you just have a lot of children do suffer with travel? I mean, it's a common thing in kids. So
yeah,
is that
I could have just
had.
Yeah, because realistically, like before that, I wasn't really a sicky person. Like I was, that's not even words. I wasn't really
that's
sick.
Leather, isn't
yeah,
it?
Do you know what? Touch leather might do me a bit of luck. But yeah, I wasn't really a sicky person, I don't think, before that.
So,
okay.
And I've never been, I don't even want to say that in case I jinx it, but I haven't been in public. Yeah, like that. Because I understand if I had a traumatic experience where I was like, oh no, maybe that is a traumatic experience on a plane. Don't know.
Well, you let me.
So you're being sick on the plane was prior to Morgan.
Yeah. That was when I was young.
Right. But the interesting, what asked your question, when you were sick on the plane, did it bother you?
I don't remember. All I have is a random flashback to me on British Airways, just being sick over myself and the woman having to give me a British Airways tracksuit to wear. And then I have one where I was sick once and I had to go change in an airport toilet.
So when you revisit that memory, how do you feel about it?
Not great. I don't think that was a good day for me.
And also, am I right in saying that when you just recollected that memory, you went and I had it all down, you were actually seeing it through the kids, like, as though it was on you there.
I'm sat there, yeah.
Right, so that is really significant.
But what I want to know is, not how you feel, because you've got emetophobia, so you don't like looking at vomit and you don't like vomit experiences. So not not looking through your eyes now, Grace. I want you to know how you felt as a little girl.
Little Grace. Right. Was she
were you bothered at the time?
Probably in the embarrassment aspect because I remember people go, oh no. And like, I remember the one in the airport where I had to go and change. My mum was like, oh, she's got sickle down her. We have to go get her to check, because it's the stress that comes with that, the panic, I reckon, that's maybe to do with that. Because my family, we're not like, oh, it's all right. We're like, oh my God, like we're panickers.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. No, there's no rational behaviour in my family at all.
Yeah, so it's very likely that it was actually one of those events that started your emetophobia, which...
Brilliant. Fuck British Airways.
Yeah, but I don't want to point fingers...
Sorry, British Airways.
Yeah, so, and I'm not pointing fingers here, right? But as you said, my words here, but you're an overdramatic family.
Yeah.
Okay.
Could you not tell?
Right. Yeah. I figured that out. Right? Yeah, sorry. Yeah. So... And if you consider in psychology that if you, with any children, right, if your child is running and trips up and falls over, right, and scrapes the knee. Now, there's two ways that can play out. You can go over to your child and go, oh, come on, look at this over here, right, and distract them and carry on and they're fine.
Yeah.
However, if you're overdramatic, you go, is your leg all right? You're broken leg, all right, right. Immediately, that child will start crying.
Yeah.
Because the child looks to the parent.
For guidance.
As to, is this bad or is this good?
Oh, yeah, you lot should meet my mum. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
That makes sense.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. And I think that this really is, let's look at it pragmatically and look at who caused this problem, right? And I've got to... You know, in the best possible way. Mm. I'm pointing fingers at your parents here because, right?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Because
Morgan,
my question
Morgan,
is...
We love you both. Just putting it out there.
So you're on the plane.
Yeah.
Right? And you vomit. For whatever reason, I don't know. But here's the thing, and here's the reason why I think vomit is amazing, because vomit saves lives. Do you need me to add to that?
Like when you're choking or something, or you got something bad in you. Yeah.
Absolutely.
You can stay there.
There's part of our brain, and it's actually called the area postrema. And what it does, it detects things in our body. And if it feels that, one of the things, it feels if we're going to get poisoned, it will set wheels into motion to make us vomit. Right? Certain things, your start of it is your saliva.
Yeah.
Right? You start salivating.
Yeah.
Right, that's the first thing. And then the second thing, you start taking deep breaths, and that's really to protect your lungs from what's going to happen. And it's a process of going through for you to vomit, but the purpose of it is to expel what's potentially poisonous and to save your life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because I know that had you not vomited in your life, you could well, you know, looking worst case scenario, died of alcohol poisoning.
I'm dead, yeah.
Right? Okay, so... We come to my side of the fence that vomit saves lives.
Mm.
Do you agree?
Yeah.
Good. You pause.
I'd like to die.
That wasn't me. Right.
Well, yeah. No, I do get you. Yeah, it does have good. It's a good thing. And you do feel better once you've been unwell. There's not been a moment where I've been unwell and been like, oh, you do feel better.
After you vomited.
After, yeah.
Okay.
Very interesting that was grown up.
Yeah, you see.
Grace that answered that. It's really weird because watching you when you were... like turning, like, and it was like all down me.
Yeah,
like this little girl, and then and then you've grown up again.
And that's your pause, by the way. When I say, do you agree that vomit is good?
Yeah,
initially you get this feeling, no, it's not right, which is the little girl who's created this fear, and then you go, yeah, of course it is, because you're rationalizing that. Mm-hmm. But that's the pause, because it takes your mind to work out the difference between the two.
Yeah, I agree.
Right.
But in essence, a little girl set this up, and that little girl, her belief of what vomit meant. Is running the show.
Yeah.
To this very day.
Which is why you've got the fear, because that reference that was created by you as a little girl is the one that you go to for your adult behaviours, which seems silly, really.
And that's why it doesn't fit in your life now, because it's like, you know you don't want this fear, you know that it doesn't serve you well, but yet you can't help it because this little kid that created is still believing and running the show when it comes to...
And which is why my wife here said that you're two-faced and metaphobic.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Yeah, because you've carved out. Like, it's not taking my alcohol away from me.
Yeah, that's one thing.
That's one thing it's not having, right? So, but the thing is, if you can do that, if you can say, well, I'm still going to drink, and, you know, if I vomit because of the drink, well, tough, you know, I'm just going to carry on. That shows the power of your mind and the fact that you can totally get over it because you've carved out that bit. So why not get rid of it altogether?
Yeah.
Really interestingly, by the way, some of the most common, just as examples, particularly for anybody who's listening that is struggling with emetophobia and they kind of think, oh, you know, I'm not sure where it started from. Some of the most common reasons for a phobia of vomit starting are somebody being sick at school.
Yeah.
Everybody going, eh, look, such a body's been sick.
Morgan.
Who's sat next to him?
No, I was in the middle of the room. He was on the left. Right. And he did it over people's school books as well. Very interesting.
Did he make noises as well?
I don't know. I've blocked that out. I don't remember that.
Okay. But embarrassment is one of the biggest causes of emetophobia. Yeah. Like that fear of embarrassment. Being told off. So let's say that someone has been sick and the parent didn't deal with it well, or a school teacher, and you get told off for making a mess. So Morgan could have got told, you've been sick all over the school books. You should have said you should have wanted to go to the toilet, whatever.
He could probably have it as
well. Yeah, there you go. You see, he might be the one, another chap that has it. But that's another, like,
new
being told off.
Is new carpet in the house, someone's
sick on
the carpet.
Literally, so many people that we've treated is because they've been
bloody
sick on
carpet.
New carpet.
Just get wood
and got told off.
Yeah.
Another one is being very small and seeing a parent being sick and the child not understanding what vomit is yet.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But they see their grown up being sick and think they're going to die.
That'd be me now.
Because they don't understand
okay,
it.
Okay, right, yeah.
They don't understand it. So it's like, oh, my big person's going to die. So that's another one that's really common. Copied behaviour. So if your mum has it, you could copy that behaviour.
That's the thing.
Don't question it.
And
usually copied behaviour is worse. So if your mum, for example, has emetophobia and you copied it, yours will be worse because you, as a little kid, we exaggerate things. Mm-hmm. So it's like kids will just apply it to everything. You can be sick everywhere on the planet.
Yeah.
Anything else that I've missed there that you think are the common ones?
I think you've summed it up quite well, there. I'm glad I left that with you.
Thank you. Thank you. So what we know is that you weren't born with it.
Yeah.
And what's very interesting is that you originally started by telling us that you travel around loads when you were little. Oh, my God, we were flying backwards and forwards.
Yeah.
And yet you only alluded to two events when you were sick.
That's very true, actually. Very true. I suppose you stick to that. But how do you deal with it then?
Well, because, first of all, you've generalised. So what you've done is, and that's why it's very probable that one of those events started it.
Yeah.
Because those are the, because then you generalise, went, oh, we flow loads, I was sick all the time.
Twice.
A little bit there.
I don't know because I've flown so much, but I don't really remember a lot of plane journeys, to be honest.
Because
I know
happened.
Yeah, probably just put them out of my mind, like, because it didn't happen.
But probably nothing happened. And the only reason that you're remembering these two is because they stand out because you were in a heightened state of fear or embarrassment or whatever.
In the same way, you can drive down the same road for 50 years of your life.
Mm.
And if on one of those days someone crashes into you, right, and then you look back at driving down that road, you'll only remember the one.
Yeah.
Because that was a standout one.
Mm-hmm.
So all your traveling experiences, so what you've got to do to overcome any phobia, and obviously we're talking about emetophobia in general, you've got to create a timeline and look back at your life and look, when did this start? Because we know you weren't born with it, so when did it start?
Mm-hmm.
And then when you find out when it started, you've got to ask yourself, what did I believe then? And was that correct? And look at contra evidence. Because you believe that vomit's a bad thing. I know it's not, even though that it isn't. So what we've got to do is try and give you that contra evidence. And if you accept that, and this is the variable within therapy, if you accept it immediately, you're over it. If you need a bit more convincing because you've had a lot of experiences that are because of that, then you might need more evidence.
And also, if you know the exact start, then you're more likely to overcome it quicker because we know. So, for example, we had a lady that came to our workshop recently and she'd had emetophobia for 57 years. Okay, so she's there. She's had it for 57 years. She knew the moment that it started, she remembered it vividly. She was like 3 years of age. And because she knew it and we could just throw loads of contra evidence at her, literally she walked out of our workshop emetophobia free and has been ever since. Whereas other people like yourself, not quite sure. So with you, what we would do is we would look at those two start or three with Morgan events and go, right, okay, let's look at those and let's change your perspective. Because once we change your perspective and you realise, because what you've got to do, you've got to see it for what it was and not how it felt to the little girl.
Yeah.
Put it in basically plain. And just see the truth. So the starting point was that, you know, you said we used to fly all the time, but you only remember
two things. But when,
and one of them wasn't even in an aeroplane, just saying.
And
you've gone on like really being like blaming
even
all
British Airways.
British Airways, a hard time.
I know.
Flight sales drop.
Do you know what I mean? One flight. And I mean, for all we know, you might have had like loads of sweets and stuffed yourself with ice creams and I don't know. But
what I do know is, right, in those emergency situations when you've got a child there full of vomit, what did they do? You know, the cabin crew right there. Aren't they? Fix it. Right? So, you know, fair play to British Airways.
Yeah, thank you,
Let's bring them back.
That's my
trip. So if we would have asked you before today, because we've discussed that a little bit, when do you think this started? Would you have gone with Morgan?
No, I'd say probably on the plane. That's because I was younger then, so I reckon probably on the plane. I think Morgan just tops it off.
Yeah. Right. So if you
sealed the deal.
Right. So if you consider two memories, the memory of looking down, being sick on and seeing the vomit on you on the plane, and then look at the memory of Morgan. Which is the worst of the two?
Morgan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why do you think that might be?
Don't know. I think it's because I was a bit older that I remember it more. I remember being like, oh, what the hell?
Should we tell you the right answer?
Yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah. Why did I say no? No, I panicked. Sorry. No, don't tell me anything.
The reason that it felt worse is because you already had the phobia.
That makes sense. Yeah. Are you good at this?
Thanks.
Yeah. It does make sense.
But yeah, that's why. So a lot of people will come to us and go, I think it started at this time. And then when they tell you the story, you realise that they were already frightened. And the reason it felt so bad is because that was their first phobic response.
Right.
So their phobia started just before that. Okay. And that's why people can go into therapy and they'll go, I've had loads of therapy. But they're talking about the first phobic response.
Not what
and
actually
not the start. So
it.
If you imagine the start of it, it's like the foundation, right? Mm-hmm. And then every time you have an experience, it's like you put another layer on that foundation. Yeah. It's like you're building a building. Now, if you deal with these events up here, and then you might make it a bit smaller, but then you're going to start building it back up again. And that's why what we do is we look at the foundation.
Yeah.
Because like any structure, if you demolish that foundation, the
still
whole structure...
Full.
She's good.
I'm bloody good. Yeah.
So, with you, Grace, what we know is that Morgan, you are off the hook, love.
Yeah.
It's done.
Cheers, Morg.
Yes.
Go live your life happily. It wasn't your fault.
Freed from the shackles. Yeah.
But Morgan was a phobic response. He wasn't the start of phobia.
I'll let him off.
And that's why you felt so bad.
Back
about
to British Airways.
Yeah, there we go. So we've got to work it. So now what we know is that it was either the British Airways fly or in the airport.
Right.
Because you said something about the airport.
But I don't know if that's a separate. I think that may have been a separate. Yeah,
it could have been a separate event. And how old would you have been? Was this all around the same time?
I was young. Seven-y.
Okay.
I'm going to go with six.
Yeah. And what do you remember about the airport one?
All I remember, I don't know why, I just remember walking through the airport and my mum being like, she needs to change her clothes because she smells of sick.
Now, hang on a minute. Were you carrying luggage there? Because your body, like, you were carrying...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I had a suitcase or something.
Yeah, you're carrying something there.
Bit of a visual...
I'm seeing...
There's one in each hand.
Yeah. I'm painting the picture for you.
Yeah, oh my God. Yeah. I mean, that was like... That was nice luggage.
Thank you.
It was gorgeous.
Louis Vuitton. But, yeah.
I thought I was seeing. So you're little, you're walking through the airport. So you're actually walking through the airport at this point.
And I have a feeling I was off the plane. I don't think it was before the plane. Yeah. I think that was off the plane.
Right.
So do you think you might have been sick?
Or maybe on the plane, maybe when we were landing, something like that. But all I remember is I was sick and my mum was like, we can't, well, maybe I was getting on. 'Cause she was like, she stinks of sick. So we can't go when she smells of sick.
Could it have all been the same, like on the same event? Even?
No, because my first one, I was flying with my dad.
Okay.
And the second one, I was with my mum and dad.
Okay. So we know that they were two separate events.
Yeah.
Okay. And how,
Can I ask you a question then? So so you tell me, you've told us these two events, and then obviously the third event then is with Morgan. Tell me, why is vomit a bad thing?
It's just disgusting. The whole thing is awful. It stinks. It looks awful. The whole the sound when someone's sick is awful. Have I said the smell? The smell's awful. It's just awful.
Right. So I understand that.
Thank you.
But yeah, I'm fine with that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I agree. You know, I mean, no one's ever going to, you know, say.
Triggers panic. Yeah.
Yeah. you know, your friend's not going to ring you up and say, Grace, what are you doing tonight? And you go,
I want to be sick. I'm going to stay in and be sick. Some people love it. They're like, tactical. And I'm sick. You're a different breed if you tactical, right. By the way. But yeah.
But what you're telling me is that there are three standout experiences in your life.
Yeah.
And you are essentially victimizing vomit for three experiences in your life. Is that fair to say?
Maybe it's the embarrassment it causes as well. Because if I was sick on public transport, I would be mortified.
But how many times has that happened?
None yet.
How many times have you been on public transport?
Many a time.
Right.
True.
So how many times has it happened?
Very true. Right. Not many, but every time I feel like it.
Okay. But how many times has it happened?
Never on a train.
Right, okay.
Just on a side issue now, because you obviously started this conversation talking about poo. Whenever you stepped in dog poo?
Do you know what? Don't have a dog. It's not too many times, but I'd say I could count on my hand maybe like 5 times.
So that's more than you vomited?
Yeah, true.
And then, interestingly, just describe poo to me.
Stinky.
Mm-hmm.
Looks gross. Is a bit gross. Comes from the arse.
Give me a bit of a description on sound effects.
A squelch. I'd say. Depends what they've eaten.
Okay.
Maybe a little.
So you gave us this description of vomit and you went on about the smell, the sound, and the look of it.
Yeah. I'm fine with poo.
But is it fair to say that that poo also
like if I shat myself, I probably would be like, oh, I just shat myself and just deal with that.
What's really, what I'm trying
the difference between the two is you didn't shat yourself until you were later on in life. And you had, thought it would go,
which is actually a
level.
Bit more embarrassing. Right. So thank you for pointing that out.
But it was later on in life, but you had the ability, the cognitive ability to deal with it.
Mm.
Whereas we know that the emetophobia started in childhood and you didn't have the cognitive ability to understand what had happened. Right. But here's the thing, right? Let me give you a scenario. You love your mum, don't you?
I do.
What's your mum called? We don't know.
Loretta.
Loretta, right. So Loretta has got food poisoning.
Yeah, she's on her own. God bless.
Okay. Yeah. Well, she's on her own.
Can you put your finger down?
I'm being sorry.
Loretta.
Right.
Behave.
She's on her own. No, it's just
like, that's better.
I'm not.
So Loretta.
Yeah.
So Loretta's got food poisoning. And the choices are, you're there.
Yeah.
And the choices are that Loretta does this massive vomit in front of you. Or she dies.
See ya. Genuinely, absolutely not. Sorry.
Your mum.
Are you with a big pile of sick? I could never look at her anyway. She might as well be dead if she did that in front of me.
Wow.
That would be awful. I don't think I could.
Or she dies.
Yeah.
This is a serious situation.
She's
right?
had a really good run. I don't know. That's like a lot.
What do you reckon though, seriously?
Oh, well, I wouldn't want her to die, but I'd be like, you bitch. Why would you do that?
She's had a good run.
Yeah.
I was not expecting that. I've got to be honest.
Yeah, fine. I wouldn't let her die.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what does that mean that you'd...
I'd put a cork in her and say, deal with
that. Right. So if that was the case...
Yeah.
In that moment, right, I know you'd hate it and so on, but what would vomit be doing for your mum?
I mean, it would be helping her out. It would be helping her out.
Something bigger than that.
It would stop her from dying.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's saving her life.
Yeah.
Okay. So... Everyone on the planet really is when they were young and they were born and they didn't have that reflex, used to vomit food.
You're telling me. So I'm not having kids. Christ.
Okay. So you'd feed your child and it would vomit and, you know, you'd have your child on your shoulder and pat its back so it could vomit and get rid of, you know, so it didn't choke. Okay. So vomit saves lives. Can we agree on that?
Yeah. But I don't want to do it on public transport.
Right.
I would rather die, so, I reckon.
And exactly. And let's think of anyone listening here and, you know, and I would not want to vomit on public transport.
Yeah, that's valid too.
But it's really interesting.
I would. And
it's what's very interesting. And this is, again, something to be aware of, is that the words that you use, and this is why when we treat people, even though the sort of the steps are the same, what we say is very different because it's very individual. And because you've got such a hang up on public transport, that is why we know it's starting on a plane.
Yeah, I mean, that makes it. I kind of only just clocked really until I sat here that it probably was because of the plane.
That's the only reason, because whatever is your individual starting point,
that is
the evidence. So right now, what you've been doing throughout our conversation, and this is what everybody does, is you are giving us reasons why you should continue to fear vomit.
Yeah.
You're trying to justify it.
Yeah.
Right, so what you're trying to do is you're trying to make an unacceptable situation acceptable by selling it to yourself, aren't you, really?
Yeah, she was killing her mama. Come on.
Loretta.
Yeah. I mean, that was a big test, and you failed that one.
Poor Loretta.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
So what you've got to do is be aware of that you're trying to justify it by being really dramatic, like, oh, but it stinks, and the sound, no different to pooing, really, if you think about it. If someone's got a pretty hefty dose of diarrhea and they were going to do that in front of you, it's no different to a hefty pile of vomit, but you make it a lot worse in your head because it's got to be that to justify me having this irrational fear.
Yeah.
Right, so to let go of it, you've got to stop standing up for why you should fear it. Okay, and give it a bit of an even playing field here, because you've going through your life going, I can't go on public transport and I can't stand vomit, but we've established first and foremost that vomit saves lives. Fact.
I'm just going back a second. So when this started in that moment, because our reason for being alive is, you know, our brain wants to protect us at all costs. Mm-hmm. Survival is the most important thing. So anything that is a threat to that survival, and this can be, you know, an actual threat or something that makes us feel bad, then our brain will try and protect us from that in the future. So what's happened, as we've established, that you've been on the plane as a child and you vomited, and as you were quite descriptive, it was all down you, right? And you were looking down at yourself, seeing the vomit. And in that moment, you felt really bad. So your brain has gone, right, I don't want to ever be in this situation again. What's caused it? So your brain will, whatever's caused that problem, your brain will then protect you from that in the future.
Mm-hmm. And give you anxiety, because anxiety is like a smoke alarm.
Once you start feeling anxious, you start feeling sick.
Absolutely, yes. You do.
Yeah.
But anxiety is nothing more than just your warning system. You've told me you don't like this situation because, so here's your warning. And anxiety is literally just like a little alarm system.
So in that moment, and it depends how emotionally charged you are, should we say, in that moment, you will then link things to that. So the first thing that was in front of you was the vomit. So you blame the vomit. And secondary, you blame that you're actually on a transportation device, being the plane, with people. So now you've got two issues, right? And you will be protected from them in the future. So when you put back in those situations, you feel anxious because your brain wants you to run away from that situation. But obviously, if you're on a flight, you can't run away. You're already on the flight. So you feel anxious all the way through the flight. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So what we need to do is look back in that situation and say, right, what actually happened and what is there to be frightened of? Make sense?
Yeah.
So we need to know, not the sick wasn't the problem, what caused the sick, right? Mm. Why did you vomit at that time? Was there something wrong with you? Had you had too many sweets? Had you had some food that didn't agree with you? What could have happened? Give me some scenarios.
Maybe it could have just been the motion sickness, maybe, or like maybe the food. Back in the day, it wasn't great.
What was it? What were you going to say then?
I was just going to say just life. Like, I don't know if you were just, you know, sometimes you're just ill.
Right.
I don't know.
Okay. So, but something was happening with you.
Yeah.
And again,
there was issues going on.
And again, if you would have, if your parents would have said, oh, it's not a big deal, right? And made nothing of it, then you wouldn't have the problem.
Yeah.
But you've already said they're overdramatic.
Yeah.
So, so suddenly it became a big issue and something that you should be aware of. But what I want you to realize is that the vomit didn't cause anything.
Mm.
The vomit was the end result of something that you done or eaten.
So how do you deal with it? Because obviously there is going to be times in my life where I am ill when I'm not drunk. Okay. How are you meant to deal with that?
Well, you've already told me when you've been ill and you've vomited, you've said before that you feel better, did you not?
Yes.
Right, so why would you not want to be better?
That's a good That's a good point. I can't argue with that, as long as it's not on a drone.
Okay, so you've got evidence. You see, what I want you to consider now, Grace, is that you've got evidence that when you vomited in your life, you felt better.
Yeah. So it's not a bad thing because you do feel better.
Okay.
Valid.
And look at your life now. How old are you?
23.
Right, so in 23 years, you look back at your life in that whole 23 years and you tell me how many times you can remember that you vomited.
Probably like 15, 20 times.
Okay.
How many of those were self-inflicted?
Well, like alcohol.
Yeah.
Probably like 7 of those.
Okay.
Yeah. No. 5? 5 to 7, I'd say.
So we're talking probably 7 besides.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So you consider that. Did we set on 7 then? No, did you? Well, were your maths up?
Yeah, I was trying to do the math. Didn't even remember what I said.
Eight makes it to 15. So if 7 times through alcohol, then 8 times all the causes.
In life, yeah.
Okay. In 23 years.
Yeah, that's all right, isn't it? Right.
So why is that something? And in the same time, I bet you that you probably stepped in dog poo as many times. But you're not like wandering around the streets trying to avoid it. You're just carrying on with your life and you're stepping it. Hopefully you won't. Right. So what I want you to consider is it does not represent your adult life.
Mm. Can I just ask a question?
Yes.
How many people that were on that plane do you think to this day remember, oh, Grace was sick on the plane? I remember that kid.
That's a difficult one, because if that was me, I'd remember it.
But only because you've got emetophobia.
Yeah.
Not if you didn't.
Maybe, probably no one.
Yeah.
Realistically.
Okay. Absolutely.
And apart from your parents, when you were sick, what happened?
What went wrong?
What did people do?
I don't remember. Probably people went,
No, what did the cabin crew do?
Oh, they helped me and put me in a little thing. Right. Yeah, they were nice.
And if someone came in here today and, you know, to do your podcast and said, oh, do you know what? I don't think I can do it today. I'm ill. How would you feel?
That's all right.
That's all right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you be worried about them? Are you okay? What's wrong? What is it?
Yeah. No, I would.
Right. Because you're concerned.
Yeah. Don't give it to me. But yeah, I would be.
What?
Fine. That's right. A good point. Got to rationalise it.
That's exactly it. Because it's an irrational fear. You've got to rationalise it. But equally, you know, how did the plane make you vomit? What did the plane do?
Just did plane things.
So let me ask you a question.
But then I take motion sickness pills now. So that would stop whatever.
Well, yeah, and maybe, I don't dispute that perhaps, particularly because some kids do, that's just one of those things.
Yeah.
A lot of kids do have motion sickness issues, but those usually you grow out of them. So I get that and I'll give you that one. However,
very kind of you doing that. I want to give you that.
Taking it back. I am not giving you
that. I'll take the
chance. But the question is, why did you get on the aeroplane that day?
To go home.
Right. What did the aeroplane do? Did it get
took
you to
me home? Right, yeah.
Okay. So you got on that plane to go home, and I'm guessing to get there safely.
Yeah.
Did the plane do what it's supposed to do?
Yeah.
Did it let you down?
No.
Right. Okay. So if you've got motion sickness, why is that the plane's fault?
It's my fault. I am the problem.
Big question. When has the plane ever let you down?
Well, once we had to do an emergency landing, but that was the only time.
So
is that
actually
the plane's fault?
Yeah.
Why?
So no, something wrong with the engine, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'll let that one off.
Who maintains the engine?
Some bastard that didn't do it properly.
There you go.
Is that the plane's fault then?
No.
Okay.
You're going to feel bad if I get in a plane crash after this, aren't you?
You won't.
Whose fault was that?
Yeah. No, honestly, planes are brilliant. But what has a plane ever done to you?
Nothing. That's a good point. They're just there.
They're just there.
In their piece of metal doing their job.
Absolutely.
Taking me on ollie bobs.
Right. So how many, you've been on a train loads of times. Have you ever seen anybody be sick?
No.
Right. Okay. So I've been on a train loads of times. I've never seen anyone sick on a train. Are you?
Never.
Right. Okay. So would it be fair to say that the likelihood of you or anyone else being sick
is pretty low?
In fact, let's broaden this out. Public transport.
Yeah.
When have you seen anyone sick on any form of public transport?
Once on a bus.
Tell us.
Don't know, some beast was sat on the top of the bus. This was the height of my emetophobia as well. It was on a college bus. It was awful anyway. And then some guy came down. Thank God he was sat upstairs. And he had like a Sainsbury's bag and it was dripping with sick as he got off the bus.
And was he sober?
Yeah, he was just ill.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that was nice. You were concerned about him then. He was just ill.
Yeah. Thank you.
Bit of a change, though. Yeah. Right?
So
I'm a changed woman.
Look at that. So at the point, what that's really interesting there is that you showed a bit of kindness then. You went, he was ill. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
Right. So if anybody were to be sick on a train, plane, taxi, whatever, how do you think other people would perceive that?
I think, well, because Rosie, my producer, said, oh no, who was it? Someone was ill. It wasn't Rosie. Sorry, Rosie, for dragging you into that. Someone was ill on the tube and everyone was like, oh, are you okay? Do you need water? So they were quite nice. Good thing I was not it. I'd be like, see ya.
Yeah.
But people would be nice.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, that's a good point, because it's all about you're worried about
you've been seeing it from a little girl's perspective. And I would suggest, because when you were running through the airport, you said that your mum was like, oh my God, she stinks of vomit.
Yeah.
Right. So in that scenario, who's made the smell of vomit seem like a really bad and embarrassing thing?
My mum.
Loretta, this one's on you.
Loretta, come on.
Yeah, come on.
But seriously, who, because other than that,
you were living with
up
it.
Until that moment,
you were walking through
quite happy.
Yeah. You could have been walking the walk, do you know what I mean? Forget the vomit, I've got the bags.
Yeah, don't worry, guys.
Got the loo, I'm all right, yeah.
Who made the big deal out of that scenario, genuinely?
Yeah, my mum.
Okay, so what did the vomit have to do with that?
Yeah, no, do you know what? You do make good points.
Thanks.
You do.
But when you can see it for what it is and not how it felt to a
kid. Rationalise it, yeah.
Again, like I said, because a phobia is an irrational fear, when you are able to rationalise it, that's when you can start to let things go. And when you start to realise that up until this moment, you've been trying to justify your fear by looking for evidence to keep it.
Mm.
And what I mean by that is, like, not that you want it, but you're going, well, yeah, but it stinks. Well, shit stinks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Being honest.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just putting it out there. When have you ever gone to the toilet and had a poo and thought, wow, that smells amazing?
Like, speak for yourself, Nick, mate. Smell like roses.
Never.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So, but you're still going, you know, do it every day.
That's a good point.
But you've been two-faced about your bodily fluids there.
I am.
Because you're like, shit, puke, but no different. Yeah. And realistically, you know, you crap on a daily basis, I hope. You've got a good, you know, good system, good rhythm going on.
So what is the difference? And I remember you calling in a phrase once.
Me?
Yes.
Moi?
Yeah, you've forgotten it.
I've got all
what you're saying, what is... what is the going for a poo?
Yeah.
Is that any different? And could it just well be bum vomit? That's what you said.
Oh, that's the worst phrase I have ever heard
but diarrhea diarrhea is bum vomit.
Yeah, I mean, it is true,
right? So
Jesus.
that's
my new trigger word.
Brutal.
You bum vomiter. Fair play. It's true. It's even like the drinking of the drink, like, realistically,
right. So going back to that,
I probably won't be ill if I have a Capri Sun.
Well, was it the Capri Sun that made you ill?
No.
What made you ill?
It was my stomach bug.
Right,
that I remember.
Right. So is it fair to say that you have been chastising and
Capri Sun?
I've been putting them out of business. Sorry, Capri Sun.
And what did it do?
Nothing. It hydrated me, actually, in my time of need.
Before you vomited with the Capri Sun, how many Capri Suns have you had in your life?
Maybe too many.
Right, and if you'd have
enjoyed them all.
Yeah.
And because you had a stomach bug, even if you'd had a cup of tea or whatever,
it would have been the same.
Would you still been sick?
Thank God it wasn't tea. I live off tea. Jesus.
But it could have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could have ruined that for you.
Yeah. I could drink that.
Of course you could.
I reckon.
Give it a go.
Pass the caps.
Here we go.
Do you know what would be Sod's Law if I was actually after this?
Sorry, we're here.
I'll block anyway. Ciao.
The Capri Sun never made you sick at all. It was nothing to do with it. You had a stomach bug.
And it's been that long that they used to have straws.
They don't have straws. Modern day now. Modern.
Still smells the same. Doesn't taste as good as I remember, actually, to be honest.
10 years is a long time.
Tastes a bit like stomach bugs.
Yeah, it's not got vodka in it as well.
Really?
No, yeah, it just reminds me of being
Yeah, and
ill.
I get that.
I get that.
I get that. It's like I used to drink Lucozade when we were kids, when we were ill.
When you were ill.
And now I can't drink that. Yeah. I only drink it if I feel ill, then I
You only used to get it when you were ill.
Yeah, you don't
yeah.
only allow
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
you
heard about this. Yeah.
So the point being is you've got an association, but was it the Capri Sun's fault?
No.
Did you enjoy it up until having a stomach bug?
Right.
I did, yeah.
So what put you off Capri Sun?
Being sick.
Right, and what did that have to do with that?
Nothing.
Right, okay.
You were just a pawn in
my
game.
Let me ask you a question.
Sorry, Kat.
Do you remember being a time in your life, before you were sick on that, and it was absolutely, you're outside, it was roasting, and you really wanted your favourite drink?
Capri Sun.
Right, give me one of those memories.
Yeah, probably out in the garden in the summer.
Tell me.
Capri Sun, one hand.
Yeah.
Sun lounger.
Waiting for it.
Had to wear some factor 50. My mum's scared I'll get cancer.
So okay.
Smelt better that.
That's why you've got a fear of death.
That's
the one.
Absolutely, yeah.
Put your Loretta, what have you been doing? What have you been teaching? Come on.
A monster.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So go back to that memory.
Right.
Hot.
See yourself there.
Hot. I need a cold drink.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. I'm parched.
Yeah.
Parched.
So
oh,
hot.
What have we got? What? Oh, my favourite.
It's a Capri Sun. That hit the spot. It's not my favourite drink, but I don't, you're right, I wouldn't associate that. If I had it again, might cross my mind, but it wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you've got
Have
it.
Have you tried it with vodka?
Do you know what, I should do that.
A bit of ice.
I actually should do
that. Slice
of
orange.
That would kill me straight away. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but do you know what, it's not as scary as I thought maybe it would be. I'm fine so far.
Could you
so
see
you've had
me
it
now
and
as
don't
it
feel
was?
Sick.
Yeah, don't feel sick. As sick as I always do. So I feel all right. Do you know what? I do feel okay. I think the test will be when I go home today when I'm in the car with my dad.
So let me ask you a question. When's public transport ever made you vomit?
Never. Well, apart from on the plane. Well, no, sorry. Silly me.
Motion.
Yes.
Never.
Motion sickness, mate.
Yeah. The public transport has never made me ill.
Correct.
Valid.
When have you ever been ill in a car with your dad?
Think once that I remember.
When was
the back seat? I had to pull over on the motorway. Sorry.
How old were you?
About like, it was on the way back from the airport.
I'm thinking, honestly, I'm sure
it's
that there's a link. There's
time.
A link
yeah.
here. Maybe you were ill with something.
Maybe I just had a.
Maybe it wasn't even motion sickness. Maybe.
I was just ill.
Yeah, maybe you just had some sort of a virus. Or,
that's true. Yeah.
But
I haven't been ill with my dad since. Not in that I meant I haven't been ill with my dad since. Sorry. Sound like he died. He is all right. So far.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. God bless. Thank you, Dad.
So, your dad drives around a lot.
He does.
Okay.
Poor sod.
So, why would you want to blame your dad or his car?
It's true. I shouldn't.
If it wasn't for your dad, we won't be doing this right now.
It's true. I'd been on train strikes.
See?
Right.
We're doing it on Zoom.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and because of your dad and his car, you're here today, we're doing this. So why would you want to blame it?
It's true. I think this is a good mindset to have. I feel like next time I'm on public transport, I'm going to go, it's not the public transport that makes me ill. And if I am ill, it's because I needed to be. Not that I will, because I never have been ill on public transport in years. And I could always just sit by the toilet.
And the thing is that the difference with kids and adults is that
kids are always
we are, as adults, able to control our bodily functions far better than children, which is why children wee themselves more often.
Dirty bastards. Yeah, I agree.
They shit themselves.
Yeah, animals.
Throw up.
Yeah.
Down the, I sat on the plane, can't be arsed, going to toilet, I'm just going to throw
up. Yeah, you do have good warning, I'll give you that. If you do feel unwell, you feel unwell.
And especially, and the irony is that when we have a phobia, then our body protects us from it more than ever.
Yeah, let's just go back to that. It's interesting that you said that. So, as...
Well, I said something interesting.
No, not you.
Hell yeah.
No, it was Grace, obviously. Yeah. So, great. So, we established these 15 times you've been sick in your life. And we know that... So, in adulthood, every time you've been sick... You obviously was just sat there and just sick all over yourself, weren't you?
Yeah, like a beast. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Now I wouldn't do that.
And why is that?
Because I carry around little bags just in case I am sick.
Right.
There you go.
That's fine. Do you know what is true? And if I do it on public transport, God forbid, I could either go to the toilet or whip out my bag, quickly do it.
But...
And what?
She's
done it.
Would you put
what? You want me to shart or be sick? It's up to you, mate. That's the approach that I'm going to have.
If but someone's it's got to be, hasn't it? Because you're only sick down yourself because you're a child.
Yeah. No, that is a good point.
And adults, like I said, we do get a warning system. We get the salivation.
Yeah, it's just when I'm anxious now, I reckon I'll think that I'm going to be ill.
But the reason that you were anxious was because you thought you were going to be ill on public transport. But if we were to take this to a court in front of a jury, and go, here's the evidence, they'd laugh you out of court.
Yeah, no, it is true.
Because you've got nothing.
I'd be hung, strung and quartered.
That'd be it, done.
Okay, fine.
End.
That's a good point. Okay, I think I can deal with this. But no, I have found this very helpful.
Oh, good.
Where have you bloody been?
Oh, sorry.
Jesus. On this morning.
On this morning, obviously.
Oh, that's where we've been.
Well, just to uplift things slightly.
Yes,
please do.
Yeah.
I have a little teapot here.
Oh,
okay.
Short and spout. And basically, don't know why I picked it up like that. That was weird. Every guest that I have, you spill the tea and I give you some tea. Do you know what that, spilling the tea means? Like, getting a bit of gossip.
Oh, God.
Right? So in here, all my past guests have put in a little bit of gossip.
Oh, okay.
And I'm going to read you one of them. And in return, I want you to anonymously write one and put it into my pot.
Okay.
No one will know it's from you.
Okay.
That's the thing. This is how you get people to spill.
Okay.
So what I'll do, I'll
that's a good idea.
Trick you into a false sense of reality here.
Okay.
And I'll give you a little bit of tea.
Oh.
Okay.
I like a bit of this
hopefully
kind of tea.
You know this is about, are you up to date with all the celebs, all the Love Islanders, all the...
Not near-ish.
Just pretend you know.
I'll I'm going to put my best acting face on.
Oh. Oh, Jesus. Okay. Right. Gordon Ramsay and Ross Kemp apparently slept together. Oh. And apparently that's well known. So that's a little bit of tea for you there.
Yeah, I don't. Right? Yeah, I don't
have you know. Even heard that before?
Yeah.
Love that.
Apparently so. Yeah, I don't know if that's obviously been going around a long time, hasn't it?
Oh, has one? It? Have you heard that ages ago?
Old news.
Oh, I only heard that last year. I thought it was piping that.
Yeah, we've got enough.
For sake.
Really?
See, well, I'm kind of glad
that
you know
that.
Because you're in the industry.
Do you know what?
I don't know.
Rumours are out there and they go around. That's been around a long time. But people
said that we're brother and sister. And it's like,
God forbid.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, you can't believe everything you hear.
You can't.
Fine. Where's the photographic evidence?
That's what we need.
That's what I'm waiting for.
That's exactly.
Time we believe it.
Okay, fine.
Horses mouth for photographic evidence only.
Okay. That is our rumour start.
Yeah, that there.
That part. is our rumour start. But I enjoyed that, actually, because I've heard that before. And I want you to give me some tea after that we can put in.
Yeah, I'll have a think of something.
So,
yeah.
You know what? It never comes back to you.
Yeah, great.
So
I'm all right
that's
with that.
The way I like to gossip. My last thing as well, I just wanted to say, what is the most random thing that you've dealt with someone that's had a phobia for?
Oh,
because I know there's people with some weird phobias.
And I think the most unusual phobias is, and there's so many, but one that... is the fear of gravity. Right, now...
We just, yeah.
No, this is two ways, right? Gravity disappearing or gravity becoming too much so it squashes you.
Nice. Right?
But we worked with a lady who had a fear that gravity would disappear. And it got to
She'd
the point...
She'd fly off, yeah.
Yeah, and it got to the point. And in fact, more than one. But there was one lady who would not leave a house because she was obviously saying the worst thing that happened if it disappeared in a house, she'd end up on the ceiling.
Yeah.
Right? But she had to go out.
There's a film about that.
And she'd had children and she had a pram. So what she did, her husband filled the pram with bricks to make it very heavy. And she would only go out pushing the pram.
With bricks.
Okay, yeah.
Fine. Because I mean, I actually understand the logic of that. Fair play.
I think one of the most unusual ones that always sticks out in my mind, this was quite a few years ago, was a young guy who had a phobia of body hair. His own or somebody else's.
Oh, he'd hate me.
Yeah, not any hair.
Poor bastard.
Yeah.
Even on himself. Wow.
Head hair was the only eyebrows. Anything on the head. Beyond head.
He should be sponsored by Veep, I reckon. He'd do great with that.
So that was
crazy.
An interesting one.
And another one is someone who was frightened that the sky was going to fall.
Custard was a good one. We worked with custard on this morning.
And that I
recently.
Get, actually. Custard? Custard is disgusting.
Custard is amazing.
Oh, you wouldn't have it at my school.
Interesting. That was always the skull, by the way, that's just triggered.
Well,
that's why that's exactly why she had her phobia.
No,
I've got to say that that was one of the highlights of this morning last year, and not because obviously anyone who has a phobia, you're suffering with it, and you know. And one thing that we really hope we've done over the years is highlight that. What's funny to some, you know, you can say, well, and make fun of people.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and people would do that. So many people get taunted because of the phobia. If you've got phobia of spiders, people send you photographs of spiders and stuff. And it's wrong because, you know, they are real anxiety disorders. Mm. And if you've got a phobia, you know, it's not a nice situation to be in. But this lady, she called, it was a phone in. It was in January last year. And she said, she couldn't even say the word. She said the yellow stuff. And what was...
You guys are going.
Yeah. And Philip said, custard. And she went... and she started retching. Yeah. And it's funny, but it's not at the same time. So it got to the point where we said, look, we really need to help me. And she said, if you can get me over this, I will have a bath in it.
Guess what?
You got her over
Guess what? So
she had a bath in it.
Yes.
It's brilliant. It's actually, we actually put it, it's on, I think it's on our TikTok, isn't it? It's brilliant.
Yeah, we
it's
should insert like a photo or something.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, that's it was amazing. Crazy. Yeah. It was
but,
a good
but it was so fun. And this was such a traumatic huge, situation huge. Because when we work with anyone, we want to test them and then put them in the same situation before and afterwards so they know that they're actually over it. And we took her to Asda, and we're in Asda with her, and they set up a custard stand. And before she even saw the stand, she actually vomited in Asda.
Twice in the
Really?
Yeah.
Glad I wasn't there.
Yeah.
Imagine. Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I'm scared of Asda too.
Yeah. Because of the absolute fear of custard. And again, we worked that back. We did a timeline.
That's crazy.
And it's because she went to a very strict school. It was a Catholic school with nuns. And because she wouldn't eat her dessert and you had to clear your plate, the spoon fed her, and it was custard, but powdered custard.
Lumpy.
That hadn't been made properly.
Yeah.
And she didn't want to eat it, and she got force fed the custard. So it was the trauma of that that created the fear.
That's mental.
Yeah.
But it was really nice at the end. She actually ate custard and loved it.
Oh, that's so sweet.
But it goes beyond that, and this is why it's so good. She had a tattoo on her arm that said custard lady.
Jesus.
And she then got a dog and called it custard.
Happy now you've
ending.
Turned her the whole other scale. Now you can't. I mean, she'll be buried in custard.
Exactly.
We've not been in a house, but I think she's painted all the walls yellow.
Honestly, the best bit about what we do is like when you can see that you've made such a big difference
Massive
to someone.
Difference.
Yeah. It is amazing. I love it. And the things that people, because we work with all sorts of things, we get to do some really cool things. Like, you know, when you have some of the fear of flying and we can then
like,
take
well,
on a plane.
Get me in a Boeing 747. Yeah. Maybe
go.
A bit more than that. I went straight for the normal aircraft.
British Airways, because you've slagged them off enough.
Yeah.
Let's bring it back a little bit.
Gorgeous BA plane. Thank you.
But I don't like BA, actually.
No, anyway, they've improved.
Yeah, they're good.
Thank you, BA. Sorry, I've got to put a disclaimer now on. I'll never get sponsored by them, will I? Virgin Airlines. Yeah. But no, it's been amazing to have you on. I feel like you've actually helped me a lot. So thank you very much. And if any of you are suffering with whatever, we're going to put your socials or whatever in there.
Thank you. Yep.
And have a little browse because you never know. We could be walking the earth with no fear at some point.
Everyone can get better.
Oh, get that tatted. That's nice. Like that. But yeah, thank you for coming on.
Loved it. Thank you so
Pleasure.
Much, Grace.
Thank you. And if you've been watching, make sure to give it a like and subscribe. And if you've been listening, give it a 5-star review and a follow. Sorry, I was a bit rusty there. I haven't done it in a while. Just do whatever you want. Thank you for watching. Bye.